Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, three really interesting conversations with three people that are very different. Andrew Yang, the former Democratic presidential candidate, he's now leading an effort in California for a ballot proposition, Prop 24, which is all about reining in big tech. John Cox is with us to announce that he's running for governor again, probably. The Republican announcing on our show, on this podcast, that he is has filed paperwork to form an exploratory committee to run for governor. We're joined by Marcellus Wiley from Fox Sports, who has a really interesting take on why he doesn't agree with Black Lives Matter, what he really thinks about the athletes and activism, what they could be doing differently. It's raw. He talks about his own family and how that changed his perception. Fascinating conversation. So let's begin it all, though, with Andrew Yang. Here he is. Andrew Yang, welcome back to The Issue Is. Great to see you.
Great to see you, too, Alex. Thank you for having me.
All right. We'll talk about Proposition 24 in a second, but let's begin with the presidential race. This week you tweeted out, make no mistake, it's tough to defeat an incumbent. How do you see the race right now?
Joe and Kamala have a lead that's consistent throughout the country and is consistent even in the swing states. But as I said, it is tough to beat an incumbent. That's doubly true at a national level in a presidential race. And one of the big question marks, Alex, is how are our votes going to be counted and when will we know the results? So there are a lot of variables heading into November. But what we're telling people is just make sure and get your vote in early. Make sure that you know where to go or where to send the ballot in, because we want to try and have a result as quickly as possible for the American people, hopefully on election night.
And you can go to the California Secretary of State website right now, and it'll give you all of that information. Let's talk for a moment about young people, because that was really at the center of your whole race. You devoted, had this online army known as the Yang Gang. You spoke to them with a pretty authentic voice in social media. I'm not sure if Joe Biden himself has ever actually written a social media post. Clearly, his staffers are putting up his posts. Engagement numbers for him way behind the president. What's your advice to Joe Biden about actually engaging with young voters?
Joe's campaign has been making use of surrogates like me to reach young people where they are on Instagram and the other social media platforms. But the reality is that Joe's appeal is broader and beyond the internet. It's one reason why he's our nominee. And there are so many voters around the country that feel very comfortable with Joe, particularly in some of the swing states that we need to win against Donald Trump. But I'm doing what I can to beat the drum and make the case online. And there are many other people just like me doing the exact same thing.
So it sounds like your basic point is Joe doesn't necessarily need to be in that space.
Well, I mean, Joe is Joe, you know. It's like trying to throw him on Twitter and Instagram. It wouldn't be authentic to him, and people would sense that. Voters can sense when something is natural for a candidate and when it's forced.
All right, well, let's talk about something else that you are working on here in California. It's called Proposition 24. You say this could really be a model for the rest of the country when it comes to big tech and regulating that. I know a lot of our viewers have not yet focused in on the propositions yet, what exactly they are. Can you explain in basic terms what Proposition 24 actually does?
Proposition 24 sees to it that your data and privacy rights are yours. And California has been the leader on this, Alex. They passed the CCPA in 2018, and this is trying to build upon that earlier law and elevate the protections for Californians so that you can opt out of geo-targeting so they can't tell where you are, that if they negligently handle your data, you actually can bring some kind of suit against them. And there's a new data protection agency envisioned in this law that's actually going to be working just on people's data and privacy rights. So this is a major step forward, and you know that it's a good thing because a lot of the tech companies don't like it. Put it in very simple terms. You know, that it's the kind of thing that is going to help Californians feel like your data or our data is ours because Right now, our data is getting sold and resold by tech companies and data brokers for tens of billions of dollars a year, and we're not seeing a dime of it.
Well, and another part of it has to do with kids and consent when it comes to their data. I know so many California kids right now are on their computers doing schoolwork all day long. Explain how that's going to work.
Well, right now, a lot of the rules around data companies and children are lax and not enforced. You can see it. And if you have a child, I'm a parent, that your kids are interacting with their screens and iPad. And a lot of the time they're interacting with content that may or may not be children appropriate. So Prop 24 is going to make it so that the standards that companies need to adhere to are more real and will be enforced much more actively than right now. It's essentially like trust that the person is the age that they say they are.
You know, but there are critics of this, not only the big tech companies, but folks on the left and the right. Labor leader Dolores Huerta, she's against this. The ACLU against this. Some more conservative editorial boards like the Orange County Register against this, saying that there are loopholes in it and that we don't really need another government bureaucracy. What do you say to those critics?
Well, what I'd say to Californian voters is, what's happening to your data right now? Do you think that the tech companies and the data brokers are looking out for you? And Prop 24 is a way to activate people's data rights so that there's actually a watchdog working on your behalf, where right now there is nobody. So to critics who are looking at this, Prop 24 sets a new higher floor. And if you want more data and privacy protections, we agree. Let's just keep working and moving this ball in the right direction. And Prop 24 absolutely moves the floor up in a direction that benefits consumers.
Why was it important for you? Because you don't live in California. Why is it important for you to get involved in this California issue?
You said it in the lead up, Alex. California's data and privacy rights rules, to me, can serve as a model for the rest of the country. So the way this looks worldwide is the US is way behind. Europe has set a series of data rights provisions that California in many ways is going to catch up to with Prop 24. And so with Europe and California at this higher level, I believe the rest of the country will follow suit. It's one reason why Prop 24 is not just important for the people in California, but it's important nationwide. And that's why I'm so passionate about supporting it.
Another issue you are so passionate about supporting, of course, is the issue of universal basic income, what you call the freedom dividend. This was the center of your campaign, $1,000 a month for every American. Well, now local mayors across the country actually launching pilot programs to do it. Here in California, Stockton Mayor Michael Tubbs has been doing it for some time now. Just this week, we spoke to Long Beach Mayor Robert Garcia about his efforts. Take a look.
Having a guaranteed income, particularly for low-income folks and workers, is going to be important in the future.
I'm sure the Yang Gang is now all following you. That's quite the online army out there as
we
well.
We love the Yang Gang.
So nice shout out for the Yang Gang there. What do you make of that and sort of where that is going?
The Yang Gang and I are thrilled that mayors like Mayor Garcia are leading the charge in implementing universal basic income trials in their communities. It started in Stockton under Mayor Tubbs, and now Mayor Garcetti in L.A. and over 20 mayors around the country have agreed that we need to have universal basic income to address the problems in their communities. So thank you, Mayor Garcia, for being a leader in this movement. And you can see it's sweeping the country like wildfire, Alex. There was a poll that came out a couple weeks ago that said that 55% of all Americans believe that we should have a universal basic income in perpetuity. And 75% or more of Americans, including a majority of both parties, agree we should have cash relief during this pandemic. So this is no longer something that's on the sidelines. This is now front and center, and you're going to see universal basic income get passed into law, not just in communities like Long Beach, but nationwide in the months to come.
You know, these pilot programs are being funded by private foundations. So right now, taxpayers not paying for this. The goal long term would be taxpayers would be paying for this. Where does that money come from? And what do you say to people that are worried about inflation?
You know, it's tough to afford a lot of things, Alex. If you have a $1 trillion tech company like Amazon, literally paying zero in federal taxes, and it's not just Amazon, you can look at Netflix and some of the other major tech companies. If we can harness the gains of all of this innovation, we can easily put $1,000 a month or more into the hands of American families around the country, particularly because that money is just going to get spent over and over again in our communities, at the local bakery or garage or daycare center, nonprofits. Like, this is the way to build a trickle-up economy. And the great thing is that money in our hands will end up creating jobs and creating economic activity right where we need it most, which is where we work and live every day.
Indeed. Let's talk for a moment about you, about where you're at, about your future, because it's interesting to see what you're doing. You've started a podcast. You're working on a nonprofit. Where do you go from here?
Certainly, thanks to the Yang Gang, Alex, I'm in position to try and help people. So our organization, Humanity Forward, has already put $8 million into the hands directly of struggling American families around the country. We're supporting down-ballot candidates who are championing universal basic income and a human-centered economy in communities around the country. I'm also stumping for Joe and Kamala because I believe we need to get Trump out of there and Joe and Kamala in to give ourselves a chance to rebuild. So there's a lot on my plate, but to me, we just need to keep working hard to solve the problems. And thanks to people who supported my campaign, I feel like I can contribute to help people in a time of real need.
There's been some thought that maybe you'll be like a technology czar in the Biden administration. Have they talked to you about a potential role in the administration? Is that something you're interested in?
I've had informal conversations, and I'm on the record saying if I have a chance to solve some of these problems that I ran on, of course I would take that opportunity. But job one is making sure that we have a chance to rebuild and that Joe and Kamala are in the White House in 2021.
So that sounds like a maybe. I like it. A member of the Yang Gang just happens to be one of our guests this week, Marcellus Wiley of Fox Sports, former NFL All-Pro. He campaigned with you. We got a photo of you two together. What did he mean to your campaign to have the support of somebody like him?
I told Marcellus, Alex, I'm a member of the Wiley Gang. Marcellus is such a class act and role model, you know, not just with his athletic endeavors, but his philanthropy, his activism. He and I both went to Columbia, and so we had that in common. He's a great family man. I was thrilled to have his support, and I'm a huge fan of his.
All right.
Marcellus, you look so sharp.
Okay. Marcellus Wiley, we were just talking a moment ago. Andrew Yang was saying he wishes he was part of the Wiley Gang. We wanted to bring you two together. Marcellus, why are you a Yang Gang person?
Oh, to say it in short, it's just I'm a humanitarian. I look at human beings for not only their greatness, but their concise expression of who they are and what they stand for. And Andrew Yang just did that for me, made me overtly support him, which I've never done for a presidential candidate. Despite voting through many cycles and elections, I never had that much passion and respect for a human being a politician. So I believed in the person before even the policies, and the policies certainly made me more excited for supporting Andrew Yang. And I look forward to him trying to jump into this race still, but if not 2024, certainly I'm Yang Gang.
Andrew, how's that feel when you hear that?
It feels tremendous because I look up to Marcellus. I also literally look up to him because he's a very imposing figure.
He is.
I love it. It's so funny. Which one of us looks like when he ran for president before?
This is a very good-looking shot, and I feel like you two actually fit that presidential profile maybe better than this guy right here. So, you know, if someone was just tuning into this photo, they'd be like, I have a feeling those guys were the presidential candidates.
Oh, no. Well, Marcellus, we're going to see you a little bit later on in the show. Andrew Yang, we love having you here. Our thanks to Andrew Yang. Now our conversation with John Cox, where he announces for the first time that he is, most likely, running for governor again. John Cox, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you, Alex. Great to be with you.
All right. So Are you running for governor again? There's rumors that you've formed an exploratory committee. Set the record straight.
Well, I'm looking at it, Alex. And the reason is that this state right now is in crisis. We've got 15% unemployment. Small businesses are literally getting crushed. We can't send our kids to school. The response out of Sacramento has been inconsistent. The things I talked about during the campaign, the incredible housing costs that we're incurring in this state, the homelessness crisis, these things have gotten worse, not better. And then now we're having fires that have fouled the air and threatened people all over the place. You know, I knew that Gavin Newsom, you know, nice looking guy like you, Alex, but he's a career politician. I've been in the private sector. I built a successful business over 40 years. I want to offer my ideas to try to get us out of this and get some changes to the state.
Well, you are definitely a handsome man, John Cox. let's be very clear, though. Have you formed an exploratory committee to run for governor?
People have asked me to consider, you know, taking another run. I got almost 5 million votes. I wasn't a celebrity or a career politician. I think that's a base to build on this time. And there's a lot of people that need to know what my ideas are for fixing the problems of this state.
So an exploratory committee means that you get a chance to look at the issue, potentially raise some money, talk to people on this issue. Sort of, what would make you not decide to run?
Well, if I felt that things were going to correct on their own, I think that's not going to happen. You know, I've talked over with my family. We've decided that this is something that needs to get done in this state. We care about what goes on here. I love California. I love living here. It's the best state in the country as far as I'm concerned. And I think, you know, what would make me not do it would be just other personal factors that aren't apparent now.
But you're a Republican. This is a very Democratic state. I mean, right now, 46% registered Democrat, 24% registered Republican. Hillary Clinton won this state by 4 million votes. Gavin Newsom beat you 62-38. So where do you come up with those votes as a Republican? How do you actually pull this off?
Let me correct you. There's 24-25% of the people in the state who are registered to neither party.
Right.
And the reason that they're not registered to either party is because they don't trust the parties. They think they're corrupt. They think they're ruled by lobbyists and things. And they're probably right. There's a lot of things that are going on here that I think people want to see fixed. And that's the thing. They want to see better management. And I've had 40 years of experience doing that and building a successful business. And I think I can apply those tools to making California better for a lot of people.
Of course, the biggest issue right now here in California and across the country is coronavirus and its extraordinary impact in every aspect of life here in California. If John Cox is governor right now, what does California's response to that actually look like? What's different than what we're seeing?
We should have been doing a lot of testing a lot earlier on so that we'd have a lot more confidence. This idea of just smothering the economy and keeping everybody sheltered has resulted in a lot more suicides, a lot more mental illness, a lot more damage to people's lives from destroying their small businesses. And that's a damage, Alex, that's going to be with us for many, many years to come.
We're also in the middle of a presidential campaign right now. Do you support President Trump's reelection? Do you think he should win over Joe Biden?
Yes, I do, because the economy is a huge issue. The Sanders AOC wing of the party is definitely in control. They want more government. And, you know, we've seen what more government and more regulations does in California.
Almost every Democratic leader of this state blames the president for his response to coronavirus. They say he didn't wear a mask publicly for months, that his testing and tracing policy wasn't very good, that he didn't take this seriously. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Listen, the federal government can do what it can do, but really and truly, the state and local authorities are much closer to the people and really should be the ones directing a lot of the effort here.
All right. John Cox, as we wrap things up, now that we're doing the governor's campaign again, and we appreciate you breaking news here on The Issue Is, here from the Exploratory Committee, what's the bumper sticker? What's the bottom line of why somebody should consider voting for you for governor?
An affordable and quality life in California. That's what we want. And we're not getting that right now.
All right. Good luck on the campaign trail. You're starting pretty early, right? This campaign is two years away.
In crisis.
Yeah.
It's in crisis. And this is a big state and it's a big job to do. So we're going to try to, you know, get out and talk to people real early here and get this job done.
Thank you, John. Nice to see you.
Thanks.
Thank you, John Cox, for the time. And finally, our conversation with Marcellus Wiley from Fox Sports. Interesting take, not so much about sports, but about politics and the interesting moment we are in when it comes to sports and politics. Marcellus Wiley, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Oh, thank you so much, and congratulations on this platform and the move, man. I'm a big fan of this. I love what you're talking about.
Oh, thank you so much, and likewise. Let's begin with this issue of athletes and activism. We're seeing entire leagues getting political in unprecedented ways. What do you make of this moment, and do you think that the activism right now is actually effective at persuading people?
I'm excited for just the social conscience to want to adjust to whatever our culture has presented itself in terms of some of the discrimination, racism, some of the issues that still plague our society, even at a lesser degree than before, but still in existence. So you have to have a healthy amount of respect for that. In terms of its effectiveness and in terms of how focused these efforts are in materializing thoughts and words into actions, that's when I get a little discouraged. I know that there are people out there who have said, shut up and dribble, and I'm not one of those people, but I talk to athletes, and I've been a former athlete in my 20s and my 30s, and I've been down that road before, and I just want them to talk about their issues and pass the ball. Not shut up and dribble, talking past the ball to PhDs, social scientists, people who are truly invested, truly in depth in this work, in this world, in these issues. I think too many times we're allowing our athletes to burden themselves with the total responsibility of changing these ills when these are deep, complex issues that shouldn't just land squarely on an athlete's lap. So if you can imagine walking up to a PhD social scientist and saying, hey, based on your athletic ability, I want you to change the world. That wouldn't go so well. And I think the flip is in respect as well. If you say to an athlete, I want you to change the world about social issues, I think that's an unfair burden placed on these guys, but tremendous amount of respect for the effort. But I think they need to pass the ball, share the experience with people who are deeply experts in these worlds, and make sure that they do a lot of the support for these athletes.
Well, it's interesting. The coach of your favorite team, the LA Clippers, Doc Rivers, had Congresswoman Karen Bass talk with the Clippers to try to educate them on these issues, educate them on matters of legislation. That happened this week, to your point. You've gotten a lot of attention for your comments about Black Lives Matter. What do you make of the movement overall?
It's not something I support in terms of the organization. But then people want to take the conversation beyond the organization to the actual movement. And then when I say, what is the movement that started, 2013? Remember, I'm born in 1974, so my Black life has mattered since the day I was born. So it's kind of hard to support an organization or a movement that, one, is so young in its existence, two, so polarizing in that same existence, and three, by some of their mission statements in terms of the principles that they're pursuing, I just disagree with. But I don't think that that should be something that antagonizes anyone that does support Black Lives Matter. I'm just sitting here trying to do the quiet things in terms of my work and my actions in terms of forming my character. I'm a guy who learned from a father who was very principle-based, and he said that the things that he went through, he's blessed to put me in a position that I didn't have to go through those same things. And that's how I took the baton from my father, who was raised in the South, in Texas, in the 40s and 50s. and went through overt racism to the fullest. And I'm a guy who's been able to stand on his shoulders based on him being in the home and a part of my nuclear family and really keeping me away from the ills of my neighborhood growing up in Compton or South Central. The gangs, the poverty, the drugs, the low ambition. My nuclear family really gave me guidance and it saved me from some of those adverse moments that presented themselves all around me. So I don't need an organization to continue that building of character and to continue to grow men and women of that character, no matter what their race or ethnicity is. So I just like I supported Andrew Yang as you had him on here earlier. I don't find the connection has to be total just based on race. There's class, there's obvious connections that come deeper than just the race card. So I tremendously hope that they have a change in this world, and I tremendously hope that that energy continues to put pressure on the ills of our world. But if you're looking for my full involvement in it, it's coming in a different capacity. It's coming at home every day in my world, looking at my family, raising my family properly. The change in the world I want to see is going to be the change I'm going to put on myself in terms of looking in the mirror and growing those in my circle of influence.
One of the main things that Black Lives Matter is arguing for is defunding of the police. That in Southern California, they're trying to have a 90% cut in the LAPD budget, for example. As somebody who grew up in Compton, does that make sense to you?
It doesn't make sense to me. I know it's detailed. It's, you know, trying to take some of the funding and put it into more social services. But my police interactions have been overwhelmingly positive, as they are by the numbers for everyone in this country, despite obviously some negative occurrences and unfortunate situations that have occurred. So for me, the defunding of the police needs to be concisely spelled out and in terms of what that means. But it's just amazing that we're going through a lot of extreme positions just to try and fix what's wrong with our world. And what's wrong with our world has to be kept in perspective compared to other countries, other civilizations, other societies. And also to know that there are no solutions fully, just trade-offs. And if you study humanity and the ills that have happened all across the world through time, America's an amazing place that I think people truly respect and truly understand because they're still here. I'm still here and in the pursuit of that prosperity to share with your family and others. But it's just amazing how this world is getting polarized and racial identity politics have been pervasive. And to your point of Doc Rivers and why I love Doc Rivers, and I love people even if I disagree with them. I think right now in this world, it seems like that's a minority stance. Like I could still love you even though I don't agree with everything you say.
Right.
Because your ideas are not married to your identity in my mind. You say an idea, I say an idea. If you disagree, let's talk through that in nuance. But it's amazing that the NBA players who were wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts, 99% of them, 90% of them has social messaging, justice, equality, Black Lives Matter on the jerseys. But only 20%, according to reports, were registered to vote. And I think that's what's unfortunate about today's times. I grew up in an action-based society where minding your own business was a positive. No one knew what the neighbor was doing, and there was a lot of positives in that. Today's world is about attention, attention-based society, and everyone wants likes and followers. And I'm looking for love and leaders. So call me in the minority in my approach, and that's fine with me, but I'm not getting caught up in the hypercharged environment that seems to exist today.
Yet amazingly, you still have a lot of followers, Marcellus, so... It seems to be working out for you.
It's crazy.
On the social media front, you got a nice game there. Big part of your social media game is your family. I follow you in social media. You've got like the cutest kid of all time, and you guys have a great time together. And I know you've talked so passionately about the importance of fatherhood, about the importance of Black fatherhood specifically. Can you expand upon that a little bit and sort of how that is such an important thing to you?
Yeah, going beyond the data that obviously supports a nuclear family, and especially if you want to narrow that focus to the Black community, what do they say? Over 70% of our homes are single-parent homes, and I think the erosion of a nuclear family is in part supporting and contributing to the ills of our community. And we want to skip over that and look past that step and try and fix all of these grander issues that really have a simpler cure, which is to make sure that your commitment is to you and to your family and to a significant other, to a wife, to raise that family. And that will be the compass necessary to navigate you throughout this world. Nothing's guaranteed. And it's amazing that this world has become zero sum or absolute in the sense that people don't want to give themselves the best opportunity, the best chance of success. So I tell them a lot of times in a lighthearted way, something that one of my coaches said in our special teams meeting, and no one in the NFL wants to be on special teams. It's like, it's kind of like with the outcast, you know, you want to be a starting offensive player, starting defensive player. Special teams is like, well, you're still here at least. But our coach used to say, look, to block a kick, I can't guarantee you will block a kick if you give me 100% effort. But if you don't give me 100% effort, I can guarantee you will never block one. That means so much to me in terms of how I approach life, my mentality, and how I try to exude my character in all things I do. And I didn't say personality on purpose. I said my character. Because if I don't give myself the best chance at success, there is a guarantee that I won't be successful. So I look at our families, especially Black families, and this is happening across the board, all ethnicities, all races, whites included, the erosion of the nuclear family. And then you start to see all these other pervasive ills plague every racial group. And to me, that is a correlation. That's not just a coincidence. So I speak this message, and I think it goes beyond the boundaries of race, beyond the boundaries of class. I'm from Compton. Let me give you this short story that my grandmother, who was in Watts, California, she had six kids in Watts, California in the 60s, and the Watts riots occurred, mm-hmm. and she decides to move to greener pastures to take care of her kids. And she moves from Watts, California to Compton, California. Mm-hmm. And my mother graduates from Compton High School, straight A student, 6'1", 170, beautiful, athletic. But she had two kids by the age of 19, me being the youngest. And my mother says, I'm going to focus in on my family, raising my family with my father, Charles Wiley. And her commitment at 19 was to go to greener pastures as well, a safer community. And she moves from Compton, California to South Central Los Angeles, this little itty bitty apartment off of Slauson and Edgemont. And I grow up there, and every weekend I'm spending between Compton and Slauson. And my parents were there to just support me, encourage me, and navigate me through all the ills that we had seen in our own family, let alone in our community. And that's why it's so important to me. And no one's going to talk me off this stand saying, I don't care how much the mob or whatever they call these people on Twitter that hate you and try to polarize you and cancel you. I just laugh. I'm a guy who's been shot at six times on the minimum in terms of running for my life because bullets rang out in my vicinity growing up. I'm a guy that had shotguns to my head twice by police officers, one a mistaken identity and one time playing with a BB gun that looked real. And in both of those situations, apologies were given by those same police officers and obviously no harm inflicted on me. I'm just the guy who's been through it. And now I'm in a world where I'm looking at people who haven't been through it, and therefore it kind of shows in their rhetoric. They're talking before they're walking. And I button it up by saying that the Migos had a song, Walk It Like You Talk It. And I say, I think they got that song wrong, even though I love that song. It should be Talk It Like You Walk It. Wow. And I hope the world takes notice.
And interesting that even after that experience, you're still not for defunding the police, at least not the way that it's been explained by Black Lives Matter after that experience. All right, we want to sneak in a quick break, but we can't let you go without a few sports picks. So coming up next, Marcellus is going to give us some of the picks of what's going to happen, maybe help us make some money in Vegas. We're back with Marcellus Wiley of Fox Sports, getting that drink in. You got to stay hydrated. It's hot out this weekend. All right, so we got a lot of sports coming up. Football, baseball, basketball, all going at the same time. It's going to be the craziest few months we've ever seen in sports. So we want to get some predictions from you, maybe help us make some money in Las Vegas. All right, so who is going to win the Super Bowl?
Wow. Let me try to build this pace. The lazy man argument would say that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers battle against the San Francisco 49ers in the NFC Championship game. Let's just go with story and say the Tampa Bay Buccaneers play the Kansas City Chiefs battling with Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. And the Ravens versus the Buccaneers. Who wins that game? The Baltimore Ravens. So there it is. I said it. Go to Vegas and lose all your money.
A ring for the MVP, Lamar Jackson, in that scenario. Who is going to win the World Series?
The LA Dodgers, finally. Let's be real about this. Hopefully. Such a weird season in terms of how short it's been, and then obviously some of the stoppages, but the addition of Mookie Betts and just how they've been knocking at the door the last several years. And let's just be real. It's been a drought since, 1988. It's time for them to get over the hump. Go Dodgers.
Yes, it is. And they do have the best record in baseball right now. And finally, I think I know where you're going with this. Who's going to win the NBA Finals?
Clip City, Chip City, Los Angeles Clippers. Yeah, they're just fully loaded, and they have two cherries on top in Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. We know what Kawhi Leonard does in terms of efficiency and leadership. And I just think because when you go to our sixth to eighth, ninth man off the bench, when you go to the scorers table, we're still bringing out starting caliber players going to number eight and nine, where other teams are kind of hoping and wishing that the guy gives them contribution. I say it's the Clippers because of Kawhi, because of Paul, and more importantly, because of our depth.
All right, well, I hate to be a homer in LA for the rest of the state, but I think it's going to be the Dodgers and either the Lakers or the Clippers. But in either event, LA wins. Our thanks to Marcellus. Our thanks to Andrew Yang and to John Cox and to you for listening. We had longer conversations than we were able to air on the TV version. So we appreciate you listening to the podcast and getting a bunch of extra content this week. We'll be back next week. Next week, we have a conversation with Chasten Buttigieg, who's got a new book out about coming out of the closet, about being married to Pete Buttigieg and what it's like being a campaign spouse. So that should be a really fascinating conversation next week on The Issue Is. But for this week, thanks for listening, and I hope you like, subscribe. And by the way, I did a podcast this week with my friend Jessica Levinson. It's called Passing Judgment, and we had a long conversation about covering politics and about this show. So check her out as well. Thanks again. See you next time.